And now time for the Talk of the Nation opinion page. In New York this Memorial Day, a revival of the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical South Pacific is the hottest ticket in town. The show, which has been nominated for 11 Tony Awards, has been sold out for months. New York Times columnist Frank Rich calls it the most unexpected cultural sensation the city has experienced in a while. Audiences, he says, start to tear up as soon as they hear the overture. It's the first Broadway revival of South Pacific in nearly 60 years. Like any good musical, there's romance and laughter, and there are plenty of catchy songs, but it isn't light. The plot centers on two weighty issues, war and race. And that, Frank Rich says, makes it very relevant, perhaps unexpectedly relevant today. Frank Rich joins us now from his home in Manhattan. It's nice to have you on the program today.
Nice to be with you.
The most common remark from those who've seen the show, you write, is, "I couldn't stop myself. I was sobbing."
If you walk around New York or presumably outside New York and talk to people who've seen South Pacific since it started performing in March, it is remarkably common how that response is, including among men as well as women and seemingly of all generations. And I think the show touches something that's very much with us right now in terms of our own relationship to the war in Iraq, of course, and also by happenstance this pioneering musical about racial issues just happened to be produced when race, to really no one expected this in advance, became a big issue in the presidential campaign this election year.
And how does a musical about soldiers training for an invasion in the South Pacific in 1942, how does that relate to Iraq, do you think?
Well, I think we have a strange relationship to the war in Iraq. Most of us don't know people who are serving there. Iraq has almost dropped off the radar screen in media coverage, maybe not on NPR or the New York Times, but in most places. And it's sort of a suppressed, maybe slightly guilty concern of all of us. We see these men and women in South Pacific fighting in the so-called good war, or waiting to fight because they're basically waiting for what would be a huge and bloody battle against Japan. And we start to make correspondences, what adds up and what doesn't. And one of the most interesting things about South Pacific is it was written almost like with newspaper freshness after the war. It was based on a book that came out in 1947, James Michener's novel, Tales of the South Pacific. It was immediately adapted by Rodgers and Hammerstein and Joshua Logan to the stage. It opened in April of 1949. Most of the people sitting in the audience then had relatives who had served in the war or maybe been killed there, and it has a different attitude. You get a sense of the duty of these people, but you also get the sense that they're human. They joke, they connive, they want to have sex, all these sort of human things that we kind of have put aside as the Iraq War has become so distant, and the people who are fighting it have become essentially political pawns on one side or the other. This brings back the humanity of these people, and also, I have to say, the importance of their mission, even though they didn't regard it in a sort of self-aggrandizing way as important. We knew what we were fighting for then. I think a lot of people don't know quite what we're doing in Iraq and haven't known for some time.
Also, by being so fresh, you say it avoids being seen through that sort of scrim of sentimentality.
Right. You know, right before 9/11, World War II was sort of rebranded as this uplifting event. And, of course, it was uplifting in many ways. We fought a war that, in my view at least, had to be fought against rapacious and truly horrible enemies. But nonetheless, it was kind of sanitized. It was the Greatest Generation. It was the Band of Brothers. It was almost as if in the late 1990s, when we really had no cause in this country, we were trying to sort of glom on to World War II, or in my case, my parents' generation war, and weren't really assessing what went on or what it was really like. And, of course, that all sort of evaporated after 9/11, and South Pacific further corrects the record, because this is not a nostalgic piece about the war. This was written at the time, more or less, and It's how it felt to the people who actually fought it and the home front that actually lived through it.
And unlike a lot of Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals, which are still pretty popular, South Pacific sort of fell into a black hole.
It did. It's very strange because it was actually one in its original run on Broadway. It in Oklahoma had the two longest runs by far. And yet in the years since, Oklahoma and even less successful shows originally, such as Carousel and The Sound of Music, and even Flower Drum Song, have had major revivals on Broadway. I think part of it was Vietnam. I think that that sort of put the kibosh on any kind of musical about war, particularly one that people think was a just war, or many people do. At the same time, there was the movie version in 1958, which is what most people think of when they
sure.
see South Pacific, because they haven't seen the real thing, which really misrepresented the piece. I didn't realize how off that movie was. I knew it wasn't a great movie, but until I saw this extraordinary production at Lincoln Center in New York, I didn't realize how much it sanitized and sentimentalized it. It was almost like a product of suburban 1950s boom America than the original Rodgers and Hammerstein show of 10 years earlier.
Yeah, mostly interesting because you realized My Favorite Martian did something before that show.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And in fact, actually, Ray Walston, we can't blame the movie on him. He had been in the London Company and on the road in South Pacific. But they it's shocking to see this version where even on stage now, where even songs like Happy Talk, which because of that movie we think of as sort of a sentimental, throwaway, silly song, have an edge to them and has an edge to it and even about things like race.
And that is the most surprising thing. Again, I've seen the movie. I've never seen the show. And the way you write about the racial tension in that production and put it back in the time in which it is set and the time in which it first appeared on Broadway, it's remarkable.
Well, it's incredibly moving. You know, the heroine of the show is a woman in her early 30s who's wanted to get away from her home of Little Rock, Arkansas. She's white, obviously. She's a nurse. She is a product of her conventional upbringing of that time. She falls in love with an expatriate French planter who lives in the South Pacific on the island she goes to, whom she discovers had a now late Polynesian wife and has two young children by this guy. And she has an incredible dilemma, and that is the real, in some ways, the real structure of the entire show. And what's fascinating about it is everyone thinks it's going to be dated and a dated view of, you know, civil rights before the real civil rights movement, but the genius of Rodgers and Hammerstein is Nellie Forbush, who is presented to the audience as a racist at the beginning of the show, is the most lovable character you could imagine, and not in a saccharine way, in a human way. And so as we see her go through these changes and try to figure out where she fits into a world that's changing about race as well as war, it has a profound and very moving effect, and it's not at all sentimental. And keep in mind that this was 8 years before Little Rock exploded at Central High School in racial violence when this show opened on Broadway, and at a time when racially mixed marriages were illegal in many American states. So imagine an audience sitting in Times Square in 1949 watching this and watching her make these choices, and it's so honestly done by Rodgers and Hammerstein that they still speak to people, particularly now as we're weighing all the issues that obviously have been raised during Obama's run for the presidency.
There's one word in the script that has been the occasion of a lot of argument.
Yes. In the original script that Rodgers and Hammerstein went into rehearsal with, Nellie Forbush uses the word colored and sort of shocked when she discovers this about the late wife of the man she loves. A harsher word was used by Michener, actually, in the original novel. In 1949, however, Rodgers and Hammerstein made the decision to throw out that word, not use it. It's now restored. It's the only significant textual change from the original 1949 version. And it lands in the audience in such a way, even though it's a relatively mild word to express bigotry, I guess, because we like this woman and we like and we also like these children that we wish that she liked and could accept, it really hits people hard. And then when you wed that to this incredible score that these guys wrote, It takes the musical theater part of it takes it to another dimension that's quite searing, I think.
And that's an odd part of it, because while the show itself, as you write, has been in a black hole all these years, those songs have not.
Those songs have entered the American language. Even people who don't know where they come from know phrases like "some enchanted evening" or "there's nothing like a dame," "younger than springtime," "I'm as corny as Kansas in August." But we've only heard them in a secondary way, it turns out. You hear them sung by these people on stage, and it's quite different from hearing them, you know, in Muzak in a lobby or in all those sort of bowlerized ways they've been done in recent years. You know, it's almost as jarring as hearing, say, John Coltrane do a version of My Favorite Things that, from Sound of Music, which has no relationship to the way it's sung in the show. This is the flip side of that. We think we've heard these songs, but we don't really know who's singing and how powerful the thoughts and feelings are that they're expressing.
And whether it was at the Lowe's Strabismus or on late night television, we think we've seen the production, but you say the show looks very different from that big Technicolor production.
Yeah, that Technicolor production was at the height of the explosion of widescreen color film. I believe it was made in the so-called long-gone Todd A.O. 70-millimeter process. And it really was as much travelogue as musical, and everything was sort of made cuter, funnier, broader. There was no real charge, with the emotional or sexual charge between the two leads as there is in this production, as I gather there was between Mary Martin and Ezio Pinza in 1949. So it's almost as if it's a neutered South Pacific, and it's shocking. It'd almost be instructional for children to be taken to the version at Lincoln Center and then to see the movie. You'd learn so much about how a text can be transformed by the way it's produced. And this production right now hasn't reinvented the wheel. It's not some modern updating. It's not avant-garde. It's just going with what Rodgers and Hammerstein wrote and playing it for the reality that's there. And it turns out if a script is written honestly, emotionally and intellectually and creatively from the get-go, you can find it with great performers and a great director like Bartlett Scheer, who did this production.
And there's a last scene which you describe, seemingly very mundane, very strange for the last scene of a big musical, which has extraordinary power.
It does. You know, you think these Rodgers and Hammerstein, you know, would end a show like Oklahoma with everyone singing Oklahoma at the top of their lungs, or Sound of Music with the "Climb Every Mountain." This ends with the simple act of Emile Debeck, played by Paolo Zott, Nellie Forbush, played by Kelly O'Hara, and these two mixed-race children sitting down for a meal, which, by the way, is exactly the way it ended in 1949. And you look at that family, and there's no dialogue really to it. There's just a thread of music, and the whole audience is just, you know, I think, thunderstruck and tearful, because somehow it becomes a way by which we measure where we stand on all these issues, each individual member of the audience right. And American society as a whole. And because it's so real and unsentimental, right. You respond to it as if it's people you know, and what's your reaction to them? What do you think about this? What progress have these characters made over the time during which South Pacific is set? What progress have they not made? And it's very powerful, and I think sends the audience out with something to really think about and brood upon, as well as to be moved by.
Frank Rich, thanks very much.
Thank you.
You can find a link to Frank Rich's Memorial Day at South Pacific on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.